That is effectively what courage is. It's taking an action, regardless of what the outcome might be. You know what you think it should be, but you've got to make that decision anyway. So
that's really well put.
It was.
To supercharge your business, you need the tools, skills, and confidence to get customers to desire what you do. This is the place you'll come to listen to advice and debate on business and marketing, tackling the biggest challenges and unlocking the biggest wins. I'm Simon McMahon. Welcome to the Contenting Business Podcast. Welcome back. This week, we're talking about courage and being comfortable with yourself and your business in the way you conduct yourself, in the way you have opinions about yourself, in the way that you think other people have opinions about you. We're going to be just covering some of the areas where it's important to be aware and be courageous and get comfortable in a personal level and as a leader in your work life, as a business owner, comfort and courage in the decisions that you make for your business. I'm with Rob.
You certainly are. It's funny, as a business owner, and we'll go through all of it, becoming one in the first place is that it takes a lot of courage just to do it, you know, to start, and then you need courage constantly throughout the whole process. It doesn't go away. I think your biggest leap of faith is doing it in the first place.
Getting started.
But there's so many points throughout that journey to really get to where you want to get to. Courage is one of the most important skills, because otherwise you just don't really push yourself forward. Because as soon as things get difficult, you need some courage to push on through them. So yeah, some interesting points here, I think, some really useful points.
Yeah, and I think in this world of online, social, digital, constant connection, people at a younger age are being exposed to more scrutiny with friend groups and WhatsApp groups through school. And that potentially has a lasting effect on them as they go into into a career and just as they grow up. But even regardless of all that, for the people like us here right now, running businesses, working in businesses, having courage and being comfortable with yourself and your performance and your general manner, as long as you feel you're being good and right. And he's really, really, you're absolutely right. It's really, really important. So we're going to talk about it on a personal level for some time. Then we'll talk about in the workplace, in leadership roles, and as business owners.
Yeah.
So first of all, at a personal level, I mean, you've already started to say how important it is. I think first of all, what about the kind of that unpicking of the kind of self comfort, the being comfortable with yourself?
I think, because it's something that's always a work in progress. I don't think something you ever, one day you're just comfortable in yourself. I think that is one that you work on all of the time, because I'll always go through phases of not being, and then I work on myself, whether it could be physically, how I'm feeling mentally. And, you know, you have to work on yourself constantly. I've just recently started doing something called The Miracle Morning. We can maybe put some links to that book. And that's been very much about setting myself up to be comfortable with myself throughout the day. So it includes some meditation, some exercise, affirmations about who you think you are and what you want to achieve. And by doing that early in the day, it's made me much more comfortable with myself. Whereas sometimes I've had a bad start to the day, we've all got a negative narrative in our head. It's there instinctively. It's for us to teach that narrative to be more positive. And if you leave it, the negative can still be there. So I think being comfortable with yourself is really important, but it's something that doesn't come without work.
The Miracle Morning, is that's a book?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a book. It's sort of almost becoming a bit more of a movement online. If you were to Google it, look on YouTube, there's all sorts of examples of people that have really got stuck in knowing what their meaning of life is, you know, what they're trying to achieve. They've got goals, they don't know how to get there. It's just about starting your day the right way and have achieved so much before your day's even started. I won't lie, the 5:30 alarm clock calls have been a struggle. This week I've not done very well at it, but it was my wife's 40th birthday last weekend, and that's caught up with me this week. But I'm, you know, my daughter this morning asked me, oh, you haven't done the Miracle Morning this morning. I said, no, and I've had a worse week for it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to Monday morning to kicking off again, because I had a great week the week before because I was just coaching myself and my brain about the sort of person I wanted to be for the week ahead. So yeah, it's really important, but it's not something that will just happen. So you've got to work on.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of getting up at 5:30 or...
You can do it any time of the day.
But yeah, with the point you're making, I guess there is that time to talk to yourself a little bit. And kind of
got to work on yourself. You've got to work on yourself personally to get to where you want to get to.
Well, my wife's district nurse goes out and visits patients who recently had surgery, and she's been nursing for years. She's been doing this job for a few years now. She does really, really, really well. She's really thorough, massive integrity. But she was saying the other day that she still doubts herself, and she was trying to kind of unpick why that is. And it's this, I mean, it's imposter syndrome, isn't it? It's no one else is potentially saying this to you. It's the voice that's inside of you, that's in the back of your head saying, "Oh, why should you be authoritative, or why should that person listen to you?" Isn't it?
Imposter syndrome. We're more of a professional space. I think I feel that personally. I think I'm quite comfortable with who I am, and I feel I fit in the world quite well. But I struggle with imposter syndrome quite a lot. Recently, I've joined a group called the Owners Network, and that's been massive for me, because suddenly I'm in a group now, and there are business owners of businesses of a certain size. And actually being in a room with people that are doing the same thing, you realize you know your stuff. You're actually better than your narrative gives you credit for. You're in a scenario where you're meeting like-minded people going through the similar struggles, having the similar highs, the similar lows. That's been massive for me. I'll put a link to that as well. If you're Warwickshire based, you know, it's something if you're a business owner, something you might look into. It's been big for me. It's now, I used to hate networking, and I think that was an imposter syndrome thing.
Oh yeah.
What place have I got in this room of business owners? What do I add? But actually meeting up once a month, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, we have breakfast, we talk, we have a motivational speaker. It's been massive. And I've now got way more confidence in that space. I walk in quite tall now. Even some people say, they've seen the change in me. Because I walk in, you know, I don't skulk around trying to avoid conversation. I walk in tall, looking forward to speaking to people. It's been really, really important. And I think, again, but it's, you can't just accept something and expect it to go away. You've got to take action. I've been taking a lot of action probably since, I reckon, November of last year. I had a meeting. I started to work with some business coaching, and it's kind of, I've identified the things that I need to improve, and I've now got things at play to make them better. You're not going to change these things, but without doing things.
Yeah.
Everything takes action. Yeah. To be confident, to have courage, it takes, you know, you have to practice these things like anything.
I think that also brings us on to another point, which is, we talked about imposter syndrome, that voice inside your head. But there's this isn't a psychology advice, unfortunately. There's loads of resources that will obviously point to go deeper. But, you know, at a high level, in addition to the imposter syndrome, which is your own voice, there's almost that fear of what other people think of you as well, you know, and that's the networking, for instance. There's the voice there is, well, what if this person thinks this of me? What if this person says this to me? What if they think I'm an idiot for going and talking to them or saying something, you know? And again, it's like a catastrophizing thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's one thing I think I've always dealt with okay. Like, I've never worried too much about what people say. I think it's more of my internal narrative. If I hear it externally, it doesn't affect me as much as it's my own internal monologue can be my worst enemy from that perspective. But yeah, no, definitely. I find it more difficult when I'm putting things out there digitally or online. That's more where, because, you know, you can't see the faces that might say something bad about you. And that's where you need to be sort of have more confidence in yourself to understand this. The problem normally, if someone attacks you with negatives, it's they've got the problem, not yourself. You've got to be quite thick skinned to that.
So I think, as we talked about the being comfortable with yourself there, you know, getting over imposter syndrome, getting over the catastrophizing or the worry of what people think, I guess that must be driven from an ego place. You know, because it's damaging to the ego that someone might say this to you, or you know, or something might go wrong. You know,
I guess so. I mean, ego is a funny one. It's something I don't feel I have much of an ego, but again, it's something I've read about and probably been taught myself quite well to not have. I mean, we'll go into sort of stoicism and elements of that, but ego can be really damaging if you don't. You can project things onto other people that's your problem. So yeah, I think when it comes to that negative feeling and how people are talking to you, it's generally your ego that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's your own ego. It's not the person projecting it. It's you.
And when people say ego, you get this picture of someone who's got a chip on their shoulder and chest puffed out and all talk and that. But actually, we've all got an ego, because the ego is the bit that doesn't want to feel shame, the bit of you that doesn't want to be embarrassed. And you know, I mention ego because of stoicism, because it's a big, big part of the Stoic philosophy of getting, you know, pushing that ego down and being humble. And being happy to accept mistakes and not being, one of the Stoics says, it's a, you know, don't be afraid to look like an idiot. You know, that you don't have to be perfect at everything. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to have an opinion on everything. And don't be afraid to be bad at something, you know. So all this that we talk about is the kind of inhibitions that we have that stop us from actually doing something, from having that conversation with someone, approaching that person, making that decision. And there's so much that stops us doing that because of fear. It's all fear based, isn't it? But the important thing is that you can get over that somehow and get going and start and make that decision and have that conversation, because that's when things happen, when you take action. So in this episode, we'll leave a lot of links, I think, in the show notes on these points, because I think there's a lot of more educated people on this than us, but we felt it was an important episode to do, because, well, as we go through, when you're running a business, when you're a leader, you need to start with the comfort and the courage in yourself before even then acting that in a business place.
Yeah, it's doubly important when you're making decisions for others.
Yeah.
You know, that courage becomes way more important.
Yeah.
Then you can make a mistake for yourself. Well, you still always make mistakes, whether it's for you personally or professionally. But it's doing what you feel right and having the confidence to deal with the outcomes of those, good or bad. And that is effectively what courage is. It's taking an action regardless of what the outcome might be. You know what you think it should be, but you've got to make that decision anyway. So
that's really well put.
It was.
The fun this week is that we're watching videos from the internet and from social that we've provided for each other's entertainment. Rob's got three, I've got three. So we'll watch one of yours first, Rob.
Yeah, you'll notice a theme with mine. I have a saved folder on Instagram, which is just called Cats for Heidi. And then when I go home every day, she says, "You got any cat videos for me today?" And it's now become, the kids fight over who I do at bedtime because they think that's when they get to see cat, funny cat videos.
So you're creating an archive of the best.
There's literally hundreds.
The best cat videos on the internet.
Heidi thinks there is a social media platform called Cats for Heidi, because that's what she sees every day.
Business idea. See, entrepreneur.
But there's a theme, but I don't think that detracts from the reaction. So go on. Let's see if it makes you smile.
Let's watch this. Right,
yeah.
So,
thing is, I've seen my reaction will be less because I've seen that five times a night.
That's the same for me as well. So, if for those listening, that's a cat. I don't even know what the cats do.
It's sort of duetting with a girl singing a bit of Spice Girls.
We've got to put it on again. I'm sorry, we got to put it on again.
I don't know. I don't know what makes a cat make that noise. That's the bit that worries me. Because it's not a normal cat reaction.
His head's going all over the place. You can't quite see what he's... yeah, what he's looking at, but that is, I got to see him.
Good.
There you go.
That was the reaction I was looking for.
And I'm already brought to tears. That is excellent.
I'm not sure, but the girl's so stupid as well.
Oh, no, yes.
I don't know if that was filmed setting up the second part.
Yeah.
Like it must have been. You know, one sings that song that way, being all loopy in the car.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. Okay.
Go for it.
So this is, funnily enough, I got a cat one.
There you go. The internet likes animals. That's the thing.
Yeah, cat videos. Yeah. It's what the internet was invented for, let's face it. So, Teletubbies cats.
We're talking Teletubbies. Tinky Winky, Dipsy, and motherfucking Pug.
Why do cats always pull that face? Anything around their ears, they just go.
So, the guys put in like, they're like Teletubbies. Rings, the rings, so you like a mask that he puts over the cat's face. And Eddie, you watch it again.
There you go.
We're talking Teletubbies, Tinky Winky, Dipsy, and motherfucking Pug.
So what at the end?
Why do they all cats anything around their ears? They just freak out.
That surprised look.
But dogs don't do that, do they? They just sort of take it.
Yeah, no.
Cats do not approve.
If I put anything on our cockapoo's head, she just sits there looking miserable.
Angry, yeah.
The cats have got this kind of shocked expression. But it's the fact that he does the swear at the end as well. No reason why.
That's good. That's good.
So taking this into your professional life, into, say, the workplace, a big area where courage is important is when there's opportunities. Is when something is presented to you and you have the opportunity to step forward and grab that or shy away from it and ask yourself, what if, what could have been? I think that's a really, in the workplace, that's probably one of the biggest areas where courage holds people back, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think one thing, you know, we live in a world where things like, you know, anxiety and things are more and more prevalent, and that will show itself really negatively in the workplace. You could be a promotion away from raising your hand when asked a question in a team meeting. If you're at the back of the room hoping to God no one asks you a question, because you don't want to, even though you know the answer, but you've not got the courage or the confidence to answer it, that could be all it takes between you going here or just staying exactly where you are. And it doesn't come naturally. You know, I used to hate, you probably remember being at school when they used to be like, I'm quite a confident reader, but being asked to read out loud in class, but my heart would race. I'd stumble over the words. And this is again something that can be coached in you to have the confidence to want, you know, be first with your hand up, confident with your answer, right or wrong. The people in that boardroom, meeting environment, interview even, they'll give you huge credit for speaking rightly or wrongly. They'll see something in you because you had the courage to answer the question, right or wrong. Then the person who does desperately avoiding eye contact, hands in their pockets, it will hold you back. Yeah. And people will always, they'd prefer to employ the person that tries and fails than the person who wouldn't try at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
Absolutely, right. And you know, this is all based on, you know, doing what you think is right as well. You know, not being brash or, no. You know, not being outspoken or overly challenging or confrontational. There's still a way that you need to conduct yourself.
Yeah.
And again, if you believe you're doing the right thing, then that shouldn't be an issue.
You don't want to be the Hermione Granger
character
who's desperate, you know, me, but you want to have, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know the answer.
Yeah.
I'll offer something in that environment.
Yeah.
And don't say something for saying something's sake, just to be heard.
Yeah.
But if you've got something productive to say or you've got confidence in your answer, well, say it.
Well,
and if it's wrong, no one's going to hate. Well, if someone dislikes you for it, then you're in the wrong organization. A positive professional space should encourage ideas, regardless, good or bad.
You make a good point there as well. You know, sometimes courage is having the option of not saying something. You know, I mentioned it earlier, you know, that again, another Stoic thing is, you know, you have the right to have no opinion. That's okay. So many of us sit in, I mean, I know I've been there, sat in a meeting, everyone's talking
And I mean, it might be something about logistics or something. Mm. And I mean, you know, I'm a marketer sat in a meeting talking about logistics, and I've been there in my younger years when I'm thinking, I need to say something in this meeting. I need to be active. I need to have a say in this. It's okay not to have an opinion and say, look, guys, that's not my expertise. That's okay. And there's a bit of courage there as well. Saying I'm okay with not knowing about this, you know.
I think there's a big part about communication in courage as well. You know, owning your mistakes is something that's really important, but you don't make a mistake quietly. You know, if you're going to do something, communicate what your thoughts are. This is what I think we should do. If it doesn't work, own it, but don't be courageous in private and think, oh, I think this might work for the company. I'll do this, because that you will get yourself into a world of trouble.
Mm.
The world is definitely own, you know, be confident, speak to your superiors, your teammates, whatever. If you've got a good idea, if it goes wrong, that's okay, because you've been very clear. This is what I think. I think this might work. We'll test it. It failed. Okay, we'll try something different next time. Don't be courageous privately, because that could be quite dangerous.
You mean like if someone's got an idea and they're too afraid to kind of openly say, I want to try this, but kind of trying to try it on the sly, but actually could cause more
damage. Yeah, I've got a great idea for
people
a company
know.
Email. Why don't we do this theme and I'll go away and just do it. And then the repercussions could be chaotic, speak to people. So I've got an idea for a great email we could send out to client base B. What do you think? And they say, okay. But if it doesn't work, own that.
Yeah.
But to think, being courageous privately and then hoping there's upside and then owning it proudly is a risk.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think there's another place where having courage in the workplace is actually raising concerns, whether that's with your own performance, you think you're underachieving and you think you need some help in a certain role, or equally, there could be, you could be witnessing something or someone struggling, or there's some inappropriate language used in the office, or you're just not comfortable with something. It takes courage just to speak up or something. I've seen workplaces become very toxic very quickly because people didn't have the courage to speak up. And I think the business owners in that setting would have been horrified to know the concerns people had, but nobody wanted to be the one that, you know, called out an individual in the office because of, I don't want to be the one that, the tattletale dobbing people in. But actually raising your concern, do it in a professional, private, don't send a company-wide email that person X has said Y. But, you know, if you've got a team leader, your boss, whoever it might be, raising concerns is really courageous.
Mm.
And, you know, this is professional, but that could be in your personal life as well. If you've got a neighbor you just think doesn't just seem right, or, you know, a family friend who's gone quiet for a long time, they might be fine, but just raising concerns. I haven't heard from Uncle Bill. He hasn't replied to my last three WhatsApp messages. You think he's okay? And he might be absolutely fine. His phone's broken, but raise the concerns. He could need help. Mm. So I think raising concerns is a big one.
Yeah, in the personal life, I mean, there's so many couples that you know, have issues and don't raise it. They don't want the hassle. They don't want the arguments. They'd rather just keep it bottled up.
Yeah.
And then things explode and couples end up having massive arguments when it could have been avoided with some communication.
Yeah, well, I'm married for the second time, I don't mind saying, and most of the problems with my first marriage was communication.
Mm.
We both were just bad we weren't bad with money, we didn't communicate about money. And if I had concerns about how much was being spent here, we just didn't talk about it to avoid confrontation. Whereas now, you know, my wife Jane and I, there's just nothing we don't talk about. And if I had any concerns about anything, I know this, we've got a very safe playing field. There's never, you know, there's nothing I couldn't raise with Jenny but I absolutely would not have raised in my past. If I had a concern about how I was feeling, how I thought the children were feeling, about work, about money, you know, raise those concerns. And also, they're often not as bad as you think.
Mm.
Something that seems in that moment like the worst thing in the world.
Catastrophizing.
You share it with somebody. Like I say, a problem shared is a problem halved, and that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So yeah, professionally, personally, yeah, raise those concerns.
Communication, time and time again, is the root cause of so many issues, particularly in the workplace.
Mm.
But again, to communicate, like you say, it takes courage, and it takes that comfort in yourself to know that the way you're feeling is the right way. That not a self-doubt of, I'm really concerned about this. I'm really nervous about this situation, but I'm not comfortable saying something. I might be wrong. I'm doubting myself. What if this happens? What if that happens? They're all, again, the reasons that mm-hmm. then you wouldn't communicate. But communication time and time again comes up as issues. And all the time, it's just if people were just more in the know about mm-hmm. things, then things would be so much easier. As soon as someone's aware about something, as soon as your manager or your colleague or your partner mm-hmm. is aware of a concern that you have or an issue, then you can start to work on it.
Mm. And I think that's harder than ever with, you know, remote working, people working on platforms like Teams and so on. You could have concerns every day about somebody, a piece of work, but it's quite hard to call that person out in a group chat. In the office environment, you might have had a popped around and just asked a quick question. Mm. So you need to, I think with all of these things, you'll see that they all need to be worked on. None of this will come naturally to anybody.
Mm.
It's all about putting in processes and teaching and, you know, self-development.
Mm. Mm. When we interviewed Patrick from Profit Room on the podcast, he talked a lot about communication and processes there because they've grown, they've been really successful, and they've obviously scaled up the team, and they're fully remote. So you can imagine getting new people into the team, setting a way of working, understanding establishing the trust with that team has been a real challenge. And time and time again, Patrick talked about the way they've revisited processes over and over again to make sure that there is a comfortable scenario, a comfortable workplace, digital, virtual workplace that people can have conversations and things. Because he knew it's a good episode to listen to because he talks a lot about how they've, you know, it's been tough and it is tough. Here's the thing for me, it's like, there's the whole kind of remote working thing means that there's a lot of chat, and there's this odd thing where people don't have the courage to say something, but they're more courageous when it comes to the keyboard.
Yeah, true. Keyboard warriors.
Right. But even if it isn't a an aggressive or confrontational message, but they'd rather type it because they don't want to say it because it's a scary.
Oh, we've all been there. We have all written an email and gone send.
Yeah.
And just because you or
written it and then deleted it and actually written what's more professional.
So many occasions I could have picked up the phone historically and it would have been easier to.
But what's interesting is when people send that message, whether it could be a balanced message, you know, just look, I'm worried about this. I don't think it's the right thing to do. They're doing that because they're worried about saying it, you know, face to face or screen to screen, so to speak. But when that message comes through, it's usually perceived worse by the recipient than if it was said face-to-face. Do you get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, true.
It's like the person has sent it as a message because they're worried about saying it. But actually, had they said it, it would have probably come across less direct, less abrasive or whatever, because there's this kind of bias of reading messages the wrong way, seeing things more negative than they actually are.
No, you're right. No, it all makes sense. It does.
But listen to the Patrick episode because it's really good the way he talks about the challenges that they've had. And another part of being courageous is, and being comfortable with yourself, is taking pride in your work. So many of us are self-degrading.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned my wife again. She's always getting compliments on her work and the way she is in the office. But she'll be the first to say, "Oh, I'm not. Oh, oh no. Well, I did this wrong." And sometimes we say, "Take the compliment. Yeah, someone is recognizing your hard work here. Just accept it. You know." I think again, that's a being comfortable with yourself thing, isn't it?
You know, I've been a few scenarios where actually I've done the same, and actually you've got to think about the other person in that relationship. How have you made that person feel? They've given you a gift of a compliment, and by you saying no, I'm not, you've just
negated what they've said.
Yeah, if it was a physical gift of a present, you'd politely say thank you, even if you didn't like it. You know, people would say, "Oh, that's rubbish." So every time you do receive a compliment, and it will be genuine. just say thank you. Even if you still have those thoughts, have them privately and just say, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Because you are then accepting a gift. Both parties are happy.
Yeah.
It's something that I've been really bad for.
Yeah.
And I've noticed it quite a few times. I thought, oh, it's all right. I did it yesterday at the networking event we spoke about. They said, oh, how many people are in your team? I said, and I know, I almost apologized for being a team of six because the person before had 35 people in their team. And she's, and it was, she wasn't like attacking me in any way. And actually she said, oh, that's amazing. I said, well, you know, we're on the journey and we were going to get bigger. And she was paying me a compliment. And I somehow couldn't accept that that was a compliment.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I work on it, but we're not perfect. It's always, I think you always remember, if someone's paying you a compliment, simply just say thank you.
Accept that compliment.
Accept it because you'll make the other person feel way better. Yeah. Even if you don't feel comfortable accepting it, just say thank you.
Yeah.
Just two words.
Yeah. Because normally it's coming from a good place. Yeah, it's genuine.
Exactly.
You would hope as well anyway. So. You
just accept the gift.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Next clip from Rob.
This is titled Roger, and you'll see why.
Really careful, not yet. Roger.
Oh.
Really careful, not yet.
Was that a cat? Is that what he looked like?
Look at Roger after
really
it.
Really careful, not yet. Roger.
It's the face that's funny.
Okay, again, so we've got a cat who tried to jump from a dinghy to a yacht and completely missed. And then the picture of this cat is...
It's the face. Look at him, furious. Furious of life.
Oh.
Roger.
We'll put the links to these videos in the show notes so you can watch them separately. Roger.
Roger.
Very good.
I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. Jaqueline.
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay, so that's how it's going to be. I've got my eye on you, Jaqueline.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Balake.
My name's Blake.
Are you out of your goddamn mind? Do you want to go to war, Balake? Because we could go to war. So you better check yourself.
Is this from a show? Or is it?
Yeah, it's Key and Peele, yeah.
Oh, is it?
D-Nice.
Oh, no.
Do you mean Denise?
Son of a bitch. A-A-Ron. Where are you? Why didn't you say it the first time I said A-A-Ron?
Watch this.
It's pronounced Aaron.
Son of a bitch! You done messed up, A-A-Ron! Oshag Hennessy!
Oshag Hennessy.
Principal O'Shaughnessy?
Get out of my goddamn classroom before I break my foot off in your ass! Insubordinate. And churlish.
Insubordinate and churlish.
Timothy.
Present.
Thank you.
Before I break my foot off in your ass.
Love it. Love it. I've not watched Key and Peele before.
They're brilliant. They got some brilliant ones, but that I just love it. It just makes no sense.
No,
it just
sense. Like,
absolutely off the wall.
Some of the best comedy doesn't.
And you also need courage as a leader when you've got a team that you need to direct, guide, support. Again, being comfortable in yourself and having courage, it takes a whole new form when you're then suddenly responsible for other people within the team.
Yeah, I think in business life and in leadership, one of the most courageous moments is that very first hire. Going from being responsible for yourself, and you know, then you know that your mistakes, or you know, the courageous decisions you make, the only person that you know is impacted is yourself. As soon as you have a team, and as that team grows, the risks based on your decision get greater and greater and greater. But that's part and parcel. You're not going to grow anything significant without people.
Yeah.
So having that, the courage, but courage, it's not just in case you make mistakes, it's courage in bringing people along. You know, you'll make promises, and not false promises, but during a recruitment process, you want people to come in on the journey and say where you're going and how you're going to get there. And you need to be that takes courage because you're selling a dream that someone's going to change their life significantly to be on that journey with you. That takes courage, but then also you've got the courage of your convictions to follow that through. It takes courage to say it in the first place, so then it takes even more courage to stick to that and keep going.
And there's a whole new world that opens up, and it, you know,
obviously you're talking from a founder's perspective. When you you go up through your career and you move into a leadership role, the courage to challenge your team, again, always in the right way, always with a, you know, wise and balanced approach. But you know, people will need challenging on their work, on the way they do things, on their conduct, good or bad. Sometimes there will be the need to have difficult conversations. And we've talked about that previously, haven't we? You know, again, catastrophizing can come in. The kind of what will they think of me can come in. But ultimately, when you're in that position, being courageous in those circumstances, when you have to sit down and have a conversation with someone, is highly important. And again, I've known so many leaders that don't want those conversations, or don't have those conversations when they're absolutely needed.
And they're for the good of your team. You know, that you'll be helping that person in the long run, as long as you, we all talk about candor, so you can, you know, give feedback, but you can do it in a way that you're not going to rip the person to shreds. You deliver feedback in such a way that how you'd like to receive that feedback. So yeah, you can challenge somebody without being aggressive towards them, or, you know, deprecating them or making them feel bad. It's actually just about helping them, you know, making them better. And they will thank you in the long run. I've looked back at my early career, and I there were definitely moments where my leaders should have, you know, called me out on things. And I developed some quite bad habits when I was much, much younger, because I got away with a few things. I became a bit lazy because, you know, my timekeeping was never questioned. So you thought, you know, I think I was only about in the very early 20s. You start thinking, I can rock in a bit late today, or I can just go a bit early. And if you're delivering really well in your job, that's fine. But definitely there were a few occasions where I needed leadership earlier on in my career. And I had some more challenging managers later on. And although I maybe didn't enjoy the relationships as much at the time, I'm probably far better for it now, because they probably didn't deliver it in the best way, which probably again taught me as a leader how to deliver those things. But there's definitely been instances where I needed to be told, and I'm the better for it. I didn't make those mistakes a second time, but they needed to work on the way they delivered that message. Mm. But there was an ego in that person. So they probably weren't very courageous in their actions. They were just not very pleasant and had an ego. You're making me look bad on my team. So there's all of these things, ego, courage, they're all, you know, you're huge in terms of stoicism and the Stoics. So many things you can learn. But challenging, you'll be helping the person is quite key.
I think when you've got a wider team as well, it's about doing the right thing and being fair to the team. Colin Durant in his spotlight session said, you know, cases where he'd seen staff who were working away, doing all the errors, and then, you know, alongside them sits a member of staff who's always on the phone and shooting out the door at 5 to 5 every day and all that. And, you know, he says about not addressing that it's unfair to all the people that are working hard, you know. Like you say, those people often need to understand that they need to be told that that's not a way to conduct themselves. And
could be consequences to their actions.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I've, you know, we're both fans of, is probably a strong word, but Gary Vee is, because he's, you know, like the content guru, if you like. He's someone that I absorb a lot of his content, mainly because he does it so well and it's everywhere. I can't avoid it. But he's talked quite openly about, if you've got one toxic person or personality in your business, he just said, fire them, sack them. In that moment, I'm not sure I would ever be that person to make such a drastic action so quickly. I think I'd probably try to help that person first, change their ways. But yeah, exactly as you said, if you've got a big team or a small team and there's one rotten apple in that team, for the sake of the team and where everyone's trying to get to, you've got to be courageous enough to cut that person out or certainly challenge their behavior.
And it's because it goes beyond you. Then that's the point of talking specifically about leadership is, you know, you're being courageous for other people, not just for yourself.
And as you have a hierarchy within your business, you've got to then empower your team to be courageous with the people beneath them. Because as soon as, you know, you can't from the top, you can't. You should never be in a position where you're reprimanding somebody or challenging somebody at a level, because that then discredits their line manager. So there's all sorts of ways, but you need to, yeah, be courageous to yourself, but then encourage, you know, empower your team to be courageous too.
You mentioned your potentially kind of egotistical boss as well. And, you know, we've all heard of the egotistical bosses that you know, inevitably you get in business sometimes. And I think that's another level of courage, comfort, you know, being comfortable in being humble, you know, not being overly disagreeable, you know, getting that ego down. I think, you know, certainly if you're a bit younger and naive or a certain character, you get put in a leadership role and suddenly, you know, okay, I'm the boss now, you know, and
you will
and
do actually, as I say.
Yeah. And one of the things that Gary Veal talk a lot about is empathy and support. And he has his chief heart officer, who's the most important person in his business and all that kind of stuff. And so that's another big part as well is it's actually courageous to be humble.
Yeah.
It's courageous to put your ego to one side when having a conversation or having a decision, because you'll also get feedback from staff and it's not always going to be great.
No, true.
You know, especially if you're fresh into leadership, you know, you will make mistakes. And like you say, it's easy to make mistakes in private, but it's much, much harder when, you know, that affects the team or it's seen by the team and you're supposed to be the more experienced person or something. Mm. But there's nothing wrong with being humble.
Yeah, I think something I've realized more and more, I think there is a perception that when you have a team, that team is there to serve you. And I completely think it's the other way around. I think you're there to serve your team. You know, that is how it is.
Great insight.
You're not there. Yeah, they're not there to do everything for you. No, you're there for them. Mm. That you're responsible for their career. You're responsible for their growth, their safety. You know, you are there for them. Mm. And to have the opinion that you will do as I say because I'm paying your salary is a horrific management style. Mm. And it shows a big ego problem. Exactly. Yeah. It all comes back to ego time and again, actually, which is an interesting theme.
There's a great book called Learn to Lead by Brené Brown. Mm. I think for anybody who's getting into leadership, becoming a leader or a boss, a manager, or even if you've been in it for a while, I think it's a really good resource because it talks about all of those things. It talks about you know, being a beacon of you know, positivity, of support, but having authority. You know, you do need authority in that position, but it's like you say, it's a really fine balance of everything.
Hmm. I think, well, again, we've sort of keep going back to it again and again, but this is all about self-development. There's, my wife used to not mock me, but she'd see me reading, what other self-help book are you reading this time? But none of us have any of this inbuilt in us. You know, we are all sort of, you know, we're all cavemen at our hearts. We'll all be very egotistical and we'll be very aggressive when needed. And you have to be willing to learn and read. Again, I'll definitely put a link to The Miracle Morning as a book. But the point of that is that you read for 20 minutes every morning before your day starts. But you read something self-development-esque. And you think if you read, so 20 minutes every day equates to quite a lot of reading over a year, and you will be better for it. And lots of these things I'm saying, I'm not suggesting what I'm saying is exceptional, but it's all things, none of this is things that I've come up with. It's things that I've read, things that I've learned. Every week, I have a business coach and we talk about what's the one thing you've read in the last week that's resonated with you. And it encourages just that reading and that self-development. And it doesn't have to be something you read. It's something you've experienced in life that has made, you know, the week better. And it could be something a conversation you've heard, a YouTube video you've watched. But I think we're all responsible for our own self-development. And it's never too late. You know, I'm early 40s. I have a few times thought, oh, if only I'd thought this way 10 years ago, but I just wasn't in the right place 10 years ago.
You wouldn't have known what you know now.
Yeah, no, exactly. So self-development, I think, is massively important and it's never too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that you got to get into a habit of it as well, because it's reiterating those messages.
And it's things you can instill down into your team. You can, you know, if you've gained knowledge through your reading, it's things you can, you know, you can share that knowledge down or recommend that book to someone in your team. I like collecting these books.
Yeah, it looked good on the shelf.
My bookshelf looks great.
They look good on the shelf. Yes, and no, I agree with that.
My only problem with self-help books is I don't often finish them. But I think that's the nature of the book. I think you can read the first half and they've told you everything they need to tell you. And actually then they're just, it's a bit of padding. If I'm honest, you can get the gist of most of sort of books of this genre.
Yeah.
In the first half, you haven't.
Usually that you can get to the core of the book quite quickly. Usually the book is what it is to just keep repeating that same message.
It does instill the message
Home. Yeah, drill that message home, because, you know, you could learn a million things in one day. It doesn't mean you're going to remember them all.
No, exactly.
Obviously, if you read it in a 300-page book, it's got a little bit more of a chance to stick in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I often revisit certain books. You know, if you do read a book like this, don't be ashamed to get your marker pens out, post-it notes. There'll be little bits that you want to come back to.
Yeah.
And a few times I've wanted to go back to find a quote and it's just rereading a book. But then generally when I go back to a book, that's when I go to an audible format. I find I absorb information better when I'm reading, but then to revisit it, something like an audible book works much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went off topic there, but hey, don't suppose that matters.
Yeah. Highlighters and sticky tabs. I love it.
Mm.
Hi, how you doing?
You good?
I'm good. the biggest wet willy.
Hey.
Hello.
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 She said what? Whatever happens to bad kitties.
Holding up a skeleton of a kitty.
Get out of my room!
I like that guy. Just screaming.
You are dodging. You're dodging.
What's he saying?
Google. That's tenuous. I got a Ferrari. I don't know about that.
Yeah, back to the beginning. How are you doing? It's the big wet welly guy.
I'm good.
They're good. I mean, you got to say Big Billy.
They're brilliant. There was a really popular one where he was kind of going, I'm Long John. I'm Long Johnson.
Yeah. No, Heidi is obsessed with cats. I could have found 1,000 more in that genre.
They were brilliant. They were brilliant. Right, last one. Oh, yeah, this is a recent one. I think you've seen this.
That guy is nuts. Would you put your head that close to a dog making those noises?
It's the most vicious looking dog in the world that he's kind of opening and closing his mouth to make noise. And then beatboxing.
It's so bad. It makes me anxious. How do you make a dog do that? The dog's really angry, surely, to make that noise. Or has he learned to do that and because his tail's wagging? Chilled?
Is his tail wagging?
No, he's not too worried about life.
I mean, it's an evil dog.
It's just Labrador.
It's an evil looking dog.
Look at his tail.
Look at him showing his teeth, though. So when he stops the break box to him to do the noise.
Look at his little tail, he looks alright.
Oh yeah, he's wagging his tail.
Is it a Labrador?
I don't know.
Looks like it. Terrifying.
Oh, dear.
I wouldn't put my face that close to a dog making them those noises. Would you?
No. So hang on. So 5 of the 6 videos were animal.
It's just
videos.
It's just how animals rule the internet.
Yeah. And we're both animal lovers.
We are, but animals do rule.
Although, I don't know if I could love that one.
No. No. God, no. Jesus.
So everything we've covered so far is about yourself and your people around you. How does that manifest itself in your business in terms of your purpose, your visions, staying true to those, staying true to your plan and your strategy for the business? There's a lot of courage there. There's a whole level, different level of courage there that comes to into play. And I think, first of all, the point of staying true to your purpose and values, I mean, if you're starting a business or if you're the very high level of a business,
there's a lot of courage in doing what you say you will do, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, if you've got to have that courage initially to A, have the dream, B, to make it happen, and C, to stick to it. And stick to it through any adversity is, I mean, I've had, and this is, I'm kind of contradicting myself, I've had many attempts at entrepreneurism, and I've not quite had the courage of my convictions to keep going with them because it got a bit hard, or, you know, didn't quite see I didn't believe in myself enough to just push it on a little bit further. I think when you want to create something important, great, you know, whatever it might be, you've got to have the courage to keep going when it's hard. I've often used an example, and this won't help people listening, but there's a sort of a tipping point where you're doing great, great things, and then you could just be 1 or 2 weeks away from it really becoming incredible, but you've not had the courage just to push through those last few weeks when it was getting tough. But your values are a big part of that as well, because if you tried to create a really great, wholesome business that had great values, but then that was too tough, so you took the cheap option and you found a cheaper supplier that had worse products, but your customer, well, don't worry about my customer because hopefully I'll have made my million before all the clothing falls apart, or, you know, the wheels fall off the cars, whatever it might be. Building a brand, a value with purpose, and you've got to stick to those goals. You can't change halfway through. You'll alienate your team, your customers, and you would much more like to be successful in the longer run by sticking to those values. Mm. You might get rich quick, I don't believe is even a thing. I think what's important is create wealth, and wealth is by creating something that you live and breathe and becomes part of your every day. Mm. Rich is here today, gone tomorrow. Mm. Wealth is building a team, it's building values, it's building a lifestyle. Mm. Stick to those. But that takes courage, because it's far easier sometimes to take the cheaper, quicker option. Mm. But stick true to what you set out to do.
And I think that feeds into the aim of being consistent and predictable. Mm. In your business, that's ultimately what you want from anything in life, really, is just things to be consistent and things to be predictable, because we all feel a lot more comfortable when we know what's going on and we're in control of things. And I've seen so many examples of businesses and individuals that have set out on a vision, set out on a journey, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do this, and then when times get tough, yes, you've got to be nimble to an extent. You've got to move with the market if there's drastic changes that affect your business. But I've seen so many businesses change strategy or change the way they do things or communicate or conduct themselves on a hairpin, you know, because things have got tough and we need to react and not have that conviction to see those challenging times through. Yep. I mentioned a couple of spotlight sessions already, but the one we did with Anna Smith from Beyond the Book, again, she spoke about sticking to a vision and delivering on a vision, being nimble, being flexible, you know, being aware of market changes and cultural changes and things like that. But ultimately, if you've got the confidence in your vision and your purpose, and you know that you're doing the right thing, you've got that comfort, then it's much, much easier to be courageous and to push through the tough times. That was one bit of advice, actually, that she left us with.
It's interesting what you said about being, in terms of being comfortable. There's sometimes a misconception that, you know, to build a business, it's big idea here and big idea here and change that there. And actually it's not. It's about being consistent and doing the things that work again and again and again and again, and keeping that focus. You can have great ideas and you can test things, but I've known people that have been on a journey and they've thought, okay, now we're going to do TikTok because TikTok's world the attention now, and they did TikTok aggressively with all their ad spend, and actually TikTok didn't work, and actually they went back to Meta as an example, And they just, because that's what worked, and they just kept doing what was already working. But they saw the big shiny thing, wasn't part of the plan, but it could be part of the plan. And actually they went back to what worked. And just by doing the same things, it sounds boring, but you know, it's not boring in the sense that you're always working on things like you're creative and so on. But being almost predictable in every day of what you're doing, it enables you to lean into what works, have consistency, have, again, it's not sexy, but steady growth. Not, you know, businesses that grow too quickly often fall over because they weren't ready. So being comfortable to grow slower, have the courage to not be an overnight success. And, you know, if you have got vision of, I don't know, big shiny things in the future, have the courage to push that dream 5 years down the road, but do it the right way. And that sometimes means doing the boring things.
Building a successful business is about having patience and having wisdom and having a long view on things, isn't it? And yeah. Daniel Priestley, the author of Oversubscribed, he said about, you know, putting things in place so that the business is consistent and successful. And, you know, new ideas will come along. But what one of the tips that he said was about, you know, doing a almost like a survey type thing. To say, you know, we're thinking of launching this product within our range. It's a little bit different. It's something new. Going out to the existing audience, maybe even a new audience, and saying, you know, what do you think of it? Or, you know, would you like to be an early tester of this product? And actually getting a flavor for what's the appetite for it? Because if it's a tumbleweed, then you go, okay, maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe we shouldn't risk our business by kind of, you know, going down this route. If you've got a good appetite there, it's something that you can potentially move into. But again, it's a very considered approach rather than snap judgments.
And there's zero ego in that decision, because if there was ego at play, they would have done it regardless.
Yeah.
My idea is the right way. It took courage to ask, and you had to be humble if everyone said no, that's a stupid idea.
That's
really doing all three of the main skills we've spoken about in one moment.
That's a good point. If you could be massively passionate about something, but if it's not something that people want, then there's no point.
It takes some courage to put your idea out there, and for everyone saying no, that's a stupid idea.
I mean
that person should have some candor in how they gave that information in, but then be humble and say, yeah, maybe I was wrong. But if you didn't, if you weren't courageous enough to ask your audience in the first place, you could have had a great idea which you never saw off the ground because you weren't willing to, let alone start it, but at least ask, is it a good idea?
Yeah,
that's good.
I think something that we've not talked about yet, and I think it's important at all of the levels of courage and being comfortable that we talked about, but it's particularly strong at this business level, is the sphere of control. And the sphere of control is what is in your control and what is outside of your control. And again, going back to the Stoics would say, worry about what's in your control. Don't worry about what's outside of your control, because that will happen and we have no say in it. This disaster could happen. You know, even things with yourself, with your own body. You know, they say, you know, you do what you can control in terms of you eat well and you exercise and those kind of things. But ultimately, you know, what happens to your body? Things happen that you don't have any control of. You can't worry about that. You can't go through life worrying about that. And it's the same in business as well. Okay, we want to go down this path. We want to launch this product. We want to, you know, follow this strategy. But what if this happens? What if the competitor decides to do the same as us? What if there's a cost increase on our supply source? What if customers decide that they want something different? All of those things are outside of your control. All you can do is what you set out to do. And as long as you've bootstrapped your idea and you've tested it and you know that it's the right thing to do and you've got that kind of feedback that it's a, you know, you've got the appetite for it, you've just got to go through with it. And you can't worry about those things. You've got to be aware. You've got to be able to react. You can't worry about things that are outside of your sphere of control.
There's been some quite high profile examples, haven't there, with say, I can't remember what's the main route through Africa where all the big haulage ships go through. Oh, that's badly put, but the main point was people's products got stuck. They just weren't getting through and there were weeks and weeks and weeks of delays. There's no point every day worrying about that. What you can control is the communication to your customers, making sure they're at the forefront of any updates about delays. Make sure, you know, maybe you have to find a short-term solution from a local supplier until while you wait for your product to finally make its way through. Waking up every day, looking at the news and chasing your fulfillment company to say, where's our products? That's not going to change anything. What you can do in that moment is look at your cash flow. Have you got enough cash in the short term to mitigate any problems? Do you need to look at some outside investment? Because you're not going to get the money from selling those products anytime soon. Reassuring your team that everything's going to be okay if it's quite a big moment. There's lots of things you can do in terms of getting that boat that's stuck somewhere in the ocean or on a river moving. You can't control that. So just, focus on what you can do. And you're far better for it by taking action in things within your sphere of control than just fretting every day. I've been guilty of it in the past. You know, someone else's problem became my problem, and lean into what you can control and you do feel far better.
And it comes back to what we've said about learning, about being humble and learning, and the learning from some of the issues like that is, okay, what can we do to make sure that that doesn't happen in future? This is a learning opportunity. This has happened and we have to deal with it. And we need to put ourselves in a position where we don't have to worry about that in future.
Yeah.
Because we've got a process in place. We've got a vision and a backup kind of strategy for it.
Yeah. And there's even things, again, from a business, but look at your cash position. I touched on it there. If you live in a world where a boat getting stuck in the ocean for 2 weeks is enough for you to go under, maybe you need to look at, the time that you got to that point. Could you be more careful with your cash position to that point? Build a small reserve or a large reserve. I've spoken to business owners. Some people can sleep well at night with only £300,000 worth of debt. Some people need six figures in the bank to sleep. Everyone's got their own levels, but you know in yourself how your sweet spot of operation. Give yourself the position where you can cope in the short term. And you can pivot, you can make decisions, you can change, you can survive. But that, your cash is something you're in control of. And, really focus on that if that's important to you. If you're, there are entrepreneurs out there that will, bet the house and everything on red. I mean, that's courage or maybe reckless. But, you know you best and, do the things in your sphere that give you the best chance to succeed.
There are so many stories about the businesses that went under during COVID. And many of those businesses were in a precarious position anyway. I mean, obviously there was hospitality and areas where they felt it worse than other businesses. But there were a lot of the businesses that really struggled or even disappeared. They were already in a difficult position or in a precarious position. The businesses that thrived were the ones that had two things. They had a stronger financial base or a stronger position, a good strategy, but also were the ones that were comfortable to make that change to the times.
What could they control? They could start to do the things differently.
Yeah, yeah. There was a brewery that's not far from where I live that they had to shut their doors and obviously all the people that they supplied into disappeared, closed the doors. And, they just went straight, I think overnight pretty much, set up a website, got into a position where they could sell their beer that was already brewed, and online, and pushed it. And they had the courage to make that push. And I know I've talked about, snap decisions and turning on a hairpin and everything. Again, everything's got to be considered. But in their position, they openly said, if they had to throw that beer away, they would have gone under. It was too much value in it. They had to make that change. And they were comfortable in doing so.
So if you can adopt some of the things we talked about today, about being courageous, about being comfortable in yourself, you can be truly remarkable because you can grab the opportunities that present themselves to you. You can find your own opportunities. You can make decisions, courageous decisions, decisions that you're comfortable with, that you know are true, that know are correct and the right thing to do. And you can have a fantastic business and a fantastic career and a fantastic personal life. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks again, Rob.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Cheers.